Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. And on today's podcast, I have a very special guest for you. I am interviewing the general partner and founder of the Delta Blockchain Fund, Kavita Gupta. She is a real pioneer in this space. And today, she will be unpacking her last few years in Web3 and what type of projects she funds, what type of founders she likes to see and invest in, as well as I'll be asking her on what are some of the mistakes that founders who are building in this space make and what can they do better, what are the challenges they face and how they can overcome them. So if you are a founder building in this space or you're thinking about building a product, then this episode is for you. Also, nothing mentioned in this episode should be taken as investment advice, and I do not run any ads on this platform. Please share this episode with a friend. And with that out of the way, let's get into it. So, Kavita, welcome to the show. So looking forward to interviewing you and finding out your journey in Web3, as well as a bit more about your fund that you have set up and how did you like become VC and all that. But first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you so much for having me.
So how did you end up in Web3?
How did I end up in Web3? I played with Bitcoin back in 2013 a little bit. Wow. Got really interested about Vitalik's first paper on Ethereum and the Bitcoin yes. Maxi. But I think I really got into it with the ICO boom in 2016. I had a dear friend who was at that time going deep into this ecosystem. So on her periphery, I started learning, looking into it. And I think and at that point of time in 2016, I was still with Eric Schmidt Family Office doing mainstream investment. And in being based out of the Valley, most of the people were not paying attention to it. But suddenly, because of my friend circle from the East Coast, I was like hearing a lot about it and like movement. Is that when it's a feeling that, okay, I missed Google, I missed Facebook being early. Is this something which is going to be life defining? And if it's not, at that point of time, then somebody else will give me a job, right? Yeah. And so with this in 2017, in 16, I moved a little bit. Experience, I'm sure most of the people who have come on your podcast must have told you, the UX UI has been really bad, buying and storing. Yes. It was like a horrified experience. I felt like I'm experiencing the internet of 80s or 70s.
Yes.
But of course, anything which has a financial value associated with it, start moving, you get curious. My background is computer engineering and economics. So I got very curious of what's the logic, why everything is moving up or down, supply, demands. And with that, I'm like in 17, took a switch and created one of the first funds in the space, the Accelerator. And I'm like, I'm going to get into it, give it 2 years and then we'll see. And it's been lovely. And then I started my own fund, Delta Blockchain Fund in 2021 as a solo GP. To be honest, solo GPs are very rare, especially solo GP as a woman of color. But I didn't think probably that much at that point of time. And I think sometimes not thinking too much also works. Yes. I just thought I was getting offers from a couple of really big funds to be GP there. And I was like, okay, I've done this a couple of times. I've worked at World Bank. I've done equities at IFC. Yeah. Like, should I try and see if I can raise my own, even a smaller amount? Or if not, then fine, that's what I'm going to do. But I got lucky and we ended up creating Delta Blockchain Fund, which approximately 100 million AUM.
Fantastic.
Million AUM and over 50 deals today and actively deploying.
That is fantastic. That's really good to hear. I have so many questions. What stage of startups do you invest in? Early stage, mid, seed, pre-seed, series, whatever.
Pre-seed and seed up to Series A, depending upon the companies are. We also do follow-ons for a bunch of our companies. And it's just basically how strong we are on the thing.
Oh, that's fantastic. Most of the listeners of this podcast, about 14,000 of them, 70% of them are Web3 startup founders. So this is perfect. So I'm thinking of on their behalf, these are the questions they would have. What are there any particular, because now even Web3 is so big. There is DeFi, there is Web3 gaming, like GameFi, there is infrastructure, there's tools, all sorts of things. Do you specialize in a particular niche or are you, Infra
is our core. Yeah, basically, this could be an infrastructure to scale a whole new blockchain gaming platform. This could be an infra, which is about identity, privacy, and infra for cross-chain swap mechanism. So it's all about infra. I know infra is broad, but we still believe at Delta that the plumbing of this Web3 still needs to be done. It's very unsexy. It's not sexy enough to talk about, we are doing forecasters, customers, and consumer applications, and NFTs, and sexy domains, or DeFi yields. But the thing is, for any of those things to scale, we still need infra. We still need scalability, interoperability, XUI, as you and me were just talking about before. Yeah. The podcast, bunch of those pieces, identity, a global identity between different chains, between different wallets, a consistent one. So we need bunch of things, and that's what we are excited about at Delta.
That is very, like, you're hitting the nail on the head with that, because it's like I talk with lots of different founders and investors pretty much 3 or 4 a day, and like often have this conversation that, okay, we need a lot of apps in this space to iOS and Google Play, and there's an app for it. So there's that motto in Web3, there is not an app for it. That's our motto. There's not yet. So it's okay, we need all these, we need the killer app and all that. But then what is it? How do you find? But then at the same time, I've often say that, okay, hey, but Web3 guys are only solving Web3 guys' problems or the problems that Web3 created in the first place. But that's when I've had pushback from other founders that, yes, we do need to do that. We need to solve those problems before we can support that sort of an app infrastructure where there are a lot more apps in the ecosystem to do everything that you need. So infrastructure has to come first before that the next wave of killer apps come. It's just like there would not have been the ICO boom without the ability to have smart contracts, ERC-20 or whatever, so on. Just like there wouldn't have been an NFT boom without the Ethereum and ERC-721A or Polygon and so on, and all the L2s making it cheaper. So same thing, we need a lot more infrastructure to enable that next layer of the app boom. As you can, I don't know if that's the right way to think.
I think there's a couple of things which you covered, right? Let's peel it. First of all, one of the things that you mentioned, I had a long 2-hour conversation with someone yesterday, which is blockchain founders building app for blockchain and crypto people, and there is nothing else. It does seem like that, but that is not entirely true. It does seem like that because the things which get hyped out of the blockchain ecosystem are DeFi, because there's a money associated with it, and there's yield, and the mainstream hedge funds are like, if we give 10% return or 15% return, people are happy. You're talking about 50% return. And NFTs, because it's glamorous and a lot of celebrities endorsed it or became part of it. Or exchanges, which is financial settlement in any capacity, because the way FTX got Tom Brady and all those people. But honest, that is definitely part and very important part and piece of the blockchain crypto community. Yes. But what people don't talk about enough is going back to the plumbing, the non-sexy part of blockchain projects, which are working, being adopted at the institutional level, but not sexy enough to make it to the front page of Wall Street. So for an example, supply chain tracking and traceability. Yes. There are ports, government ports around the world who are using blockchain for traceability and tamper-proofing. Places like UNHCR using identity solutions for the refugees built on Ethereum. Or you have passports and identity like Dubai government, which has done it as soon as you. There are just so many other voting proofs, which even in counties in Boston have done it. So I feel like there's so many use cases outside just the financial glamorous world, but they're just not cool enough to talk about.
Yeah, very true. 2 days ago, I was talking with Aperture Finance, and he was saying that, look, it feels like all these people are how in DeFi, people who are trading on DeFi, and they're trying to do what do you call points farming or airdrop
Airdrops.
farming and all that. And it just feels like you're saying that all these people who get credit cards, like multiple credit cards, and they shuffle the money around to get some points and travel hack and all that. Or I said, yeah, there's another old school version of that, even more old school. There's these women who used to collect these coupons, and they would go and buy $1,000 worth of groceries, but they'd spend the whole month collecting and cutting out coupons and driving around everywhere and doing that. Just like the old school airdrop farming. So it feels a bit like that in the DeFi world. There is a side effect to all that, and that is that it gets people interested in crypto who never were, and then they start looking at it, and then they start looking at the other. So that gets them creating their first digital wallet, and it gets them used to the whole different terminology that people in our industry uses and all that. It gets them thinking in an on-chain way compared to an off-chain way. So I don't know, maybe it is good, maybe it is not. Hard to judge at this stage.
I think point systems, the terminology is new, the new economic mechanism, but at the end of the day, it's the same incentive mechanisms, right?
Yeah.
So you take a United flight, you get a mileage, you get different trends of it, gold, platinum, 1K, whatever. And then the same way, if you want to, I think Blur did a very good job by one of the first points from airdrops and then farming and attracting a lot of people out of OpenSea ecosystem to say, hey, not only you are able to sell or buy, but you also be able to have those points which are going to be have an extra value.
Yes.
Of course, how much points can you create and which has real dollar value in the market, and how long can you keep that dollar value in the market, right?
Yes.
So by the time the third tranche or the fourth tranche came on Blur, it wasn't worth it. It was less than the sales or something, right?
Yeah.
I feel, but it still has proven to be a great way to attract a lot of customers. And then if you can retain them, some other economics to retain them, then bingo, you got it. But a lot of times as an investor, when people are now pitching us and saying, oh, we're going to do these types of airdrops, we're going to do these types of incentives, it's actually even more difficult to invest, because you really don't know after 6 months what's going to be the value.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other, I don't know, maybe this is slightly controversial, but not every project needs a token. You don't have to have a token.
I completely agree with you. And I think the market has gone much better for that, because the onus of creating a decentralization for now tokens to exist, to prove it, has definitely, VCs have taken it on their side to make sure that the companies adhere to it. And I think that has gone. So for an example, if you look at indexing space, something which I spend a lot of my time on, Covalent has token and Graph has token, but our portfolio company, AirStack, doesn't have token. And one of the big thing is, if AirStack, as an investor, I would love for them to have a token and have a like market rates out. But the thing is, that's a company which so far the model which they have doesn't have a reason or doesn't have a way to justify the decentralization of the infrastructure or the services to be able to do the token. And I feel like every time I talk to the founder, Jason, he's very honest and straightforward about it.
That is so refreshing to hear, because I feel like there are a lot more VCs in Web3 compared to Web2. For the size of Web3, there are a lot less developers in Web3 compared to Web2 for the size of Web3. But a lot more VCs. And I know it's economics is the purely the reason for that I have heard, because in a traditional Web2 environment, VC has to wait a lot longer for an exit. But in a equity plus token model, it is easier to get some liquidity for
VCs. Not anymore, to be very honest.
Yeah.
Until and unless you are thinking about the cycle of bull and bear cycle too.
Yes.
I feel like it is now 16, 17, 18 were the great times of like token move around with. As
Yes.
soon as the token is launched, VCs have liquid tokens, or 1 month later they have liquid tokens and you are shitting it on retail. I don't think that story exists anymore. Actually, it's the
That's good to
other.
hear. That's
Yeah,
really,
I
really
mean,
good to hear.
I honestly don't know. I feel like we, my, and this is a little, probably a controversial point, is I think the pendulum has moved from one extreme to another extreme. One extreme of, let's just release the token as soon as we launch the token to VCs and they can dump, to, oh, let's have a 2 year lock in and a 3 year lock in. And this is like a person who has invested 2 years before the company even going to launch the token, now has another 3 years and 2 years of token locked. It's just like 5, 6 years, right? And so that makes you start thinking, I really like the company. I like the founder. I like the tech. Why am I putting in so much risk? Then let's just wait and launch their token. And first of all, are reducing the risk of waiting for that 2 years to see if that company going to survive and actually going to make something. And once they have launched the token, I'm sure they're going to launch the token in a good liquidity bull market. But after 6 months, there's going to be a bear market. I'll rather pick it up then.
Yeah,
you know,
on secondary. Yeah, a lot of them do pick
so,
things up in
so I
secondary.
just, yeah, and I just feel the idea, which used to be that, hey, if you're not my long-term partner, and I understand from founders, hey, if you're not my long-term partner, I don't want your capital, was noble. But idea of a pre-seed investor to be a long-term partner for 6, 7 years doesn't even happen in traditional world that much.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
In a traditional world, you do seed or pre-seed, and by series B, you're out of the cap table because people, big firms start consolidating. And so I feel like we got from one extreme to another extreme, and now we should figure out a much smarter way to be both founders and investors.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot more 9 months lock in, not 2, 3 years. Some, of course, everything depends. It's so subjective. Everything depends on the project, on the location, on lots of different things. But talking about founders, what are some of the common mistakes you have seen that founders make when pitching their Web3 project?
I think if the founder, sometimes the founders are only talking about tokens, and then you just know that
they are not in it for the tech. They're not
they
in
are
it to
not
solve a
there.
problem. They are there to make money.
Yeah. So that is a big one. The second one is if it's a very, sometimes the product is really good, the founders are really good, but they are pure tech people and they don't want to get any business or product person with them. And the thing in Web3 is you could create until and unless, even if you're creating an L1 or another L2 or something, until and unless you don't have a good product person who will keep on keeping you on chain for how people are going to use it, and let's go out and have a community and build a community and have developers, you're not going to get attraction. So I've seen a lot of really good tech projects not really picking up because they never got community people. The third one I would say is this is happening little less now, but there was a whole narrative in 2019, 20, especially 21, ETH killers, parallel ones, ETH killers. Everybody was ETH killer. And some of those ETH killers then within 6 months started building bridges to Ethereum or to get that liquidity. I think that's happening less. But as soon as people say, oh, this is the benchmark, we are creating better UX UI or better experience than this or better mechanism than this, but that's why we think their valuation is 500 million after really so much of traction. So ours should be at least 50 million. I'm like, bro, this is just an idea in your head right now. Like,
that is so true.
So I think there are a bunch of ways. If you have been in this space, it's very fast to figure out where this team is going to go more. And we still end up making mistakes. So it's not like we are perfect. Like every portfolio company of ours have done amazing. We still end up making mistakes with founders.
Yeah. Because that's what I've often heard, that in early stage, you look at the founders, because there are no numbers financial. They haven't been running, operating for 5-7 years and making millions of dollars. So it's hard to look at the financial numbers. It's more looking at the team and seeing if this team has got what it takes to go through, because building a startup is so hard. Yeah. So it's just because I used to be a owner, operator, founder back in the days, and it is very stressful. So yeah, I think team is what most people in the early stage look at. Just thinking about like narratives, I feel like Web3 works a lot on narratives. And just as you were talking earlier, you were saying, you know, how 2016, 17, early 2018, the narrative was the ICOs and Ethereum was the big center of it. In 2021, it was the NFTs and a little bit of metaverse, but mostly NFTs and all that. What do you see as the next big narrative going to be?
I think right now, there are three big narratives going, right? One we already touched upon on points and airdrop farm. Second is DeepIn. And it's very funny. The DeepIn narrative also was big in 18, where, I'm a wireless provider. Now I'll have crypto. I'll have my own token. And then if you use my wireless service, you'll get token as incentives at the end of the day. So a lot of infrastructure projects coming into that. Then the third narrative is AI and blockchain.
Yeah.
So I am not personally very bullish on the first two for a long-term perspective, until and unless a very particular use case makes sense. But I'm decently analyzing and curious and learning more on AI and blockchain conversation. I still feel, and I was having this conversation earlier with someone I was interviewing, I can really see the use case of using ZK for privacy and identity within the AI ecosystem for data. For an example, there was a recent lawsuit on OpenAI and Google about from Washington, New York Times and other that, hey, you're just scrapping our thing and then you're presenting it and where does the credit or the money goes to and all that stuff. So I can definitely see a lot of AI data analysis using identity layer, privacy layer, or even using blockchain to share some sort of a profitability in again. But within the blockchain space, I feel the blockchain on-chain data is so scattered and so difficult to do that having AI bots within blockchain space is still difficult, but should happen sometime because we don't even have a search engine within the blockchain on-chain data. So that's going to be big. But those are the ones which I am right now following and feeling. Yeah. But modular blockchains is another one, which I don't want to call narrative because I truly believe that spatialized blockchain based on different idea of instead of monolithic blockchains, the world will be about modular blockchains.
Yeah. So what's a modular blockchain?
Modular blockchain is like version of base, not exactly, but like where you create, you take a consensus layer from somewhere, security from somewhere on existing monolith.
Yes, yes.
So they take optimism for verification, which goes back to Ethereum. But you decide based on your own use case, out of the four pillars, which is like security and privacy and scalability, which one is more important for you? So you fine tune it, but you are still using the underlying security of a monolithic blockchain. So like Celestia, Base, like a bunch of them. Yeah. And I feel like the world going forward will be specialized modular blockchains.
Very interesting. I can already see how things would, just like when smart contracts were new. And then that's why I joined Cookbook, because it was like a templatized smart contract. So say if you like, I don't know, you already like a project, Uniswap or something, you can just use that as a template, their smart contract or escrow or something, and you need that, and then just rename it to yours and create a fork in GitHub and stuff and launch your own smart contract really easily. I can see the same thing happening with chain. You could launch your own chain. You could just choose between the different aspects of scalability and efficiency and security and all that and privacy and all that, and then create something of your own and have your own.
Yeah. A version of it, Avalanche did it with its subnets, which also supernets, which came from
Yes.
Polygon. The idea was that, see, if you're doing a DeFi, if you're doing a DeFi product, let's say, and
Yes.
somebody, person B, is doing a gaming product, person is speed and security both are super, super important. For
Yes.
person B on the gaming side, only speed will supersede the security
Speed
aspect
and
of
cost
it.
of transaction.
Yeah, cost of transaction, right?
Yes.
So I think that's why every particular use case should have been able to
Yes.
fine-tune the aspects of it. Yeah.
Well, that makes so much sense. I have come across some interesting projects around decentralized infrastructure that like the Deepin or and some working in like solar energy, and they are making revenue as well.
Yeah.
But it is a capital intensive exercise.
Is and also, so we do have one company I'm actually proud and very excited about, Peak Network, which is again infrastructure, right? It's an infrastructure for anybody, existing infrastructure companies wants to get onto chain or become a DPN by doing tokens, etc., can just use Peak Network to immediately adopt and do their whole thing. So it's an infra play within the DPN system. And we did it year and a half back, before Deepin became the most sexy narrative of this year.
Yes.
But it has its limitations because the management of those incentives and tokens and the volatility associated with it. And then most important thing is the education of wallets, even with this UX UI of today's world and security, is still
Yeah.
limitation for a lot of people, and especially institutions, right?
Yes.
But I do see slowly and slowly, like any technology, I think I also always mention that, guys, 2015, Ethereum was just launched. Like, we are not 10 years into it,
Yes.
right? The
Yeah.
very nascent new technology. The only reason this technology is talked about so much is because there are trillion of dollars which has
Yes.
come in.
There has. Because it is still seen as it is programmable money. It is programmable anything, any programmable, and you can make it autonomous and just, and I do see where you said about convergence of AI. I came across a project a few days ago. They are putting AI models on NFTs so people can monetize. People can, you can sell your team, which the person buying it will get that model. They can run it and then they can on-sell it to someone else. So the model creators are compensated in some way. So many interesting projects I have come across in around what you're talking about, these narratives. But like, we still have to see how much revenue they can generate, how adoption goes for them and stuff. There is, there's
It's a
been a,
long cycle of adoption, though.
Yes. And I've seen like a slightly a bit more narrative around Bitcoin because of the ETFs, because of ordinals, because of all sorts of things. Talking to some other founder friends, and I asked them as well, where do they see the market going? And I heard some really interesting and really good things about Solana. I'm like, why Solana? Why suddenly Solana this year? This was a conversation I had 2 months ago. He said that, okay, he's building a product. It's got millions of users in Africa. It's for payment, what do you call payment at the sale, the machine type solution.
US,
And
yeah.
for POS, yeah, solution using stable coins and stuff and Lightning Network and all sorts of, they're trying
Point
different
of sale,
things.
yeah.
Point of sale, that's the right word. Yes, point of sale solution. And you're saying that, I was asking him, you don't even deal in Solana. Why are you bullish about it? He said, when we are building something, when we ask something in the community, in other some random blockchain, we'd have to wait for days to get a reply. He said, in Solana, within minutes, their problem is solved because the community is so active. So the support that he's getting, because of that reason, he is saying he is bullish. So I'm like, wow, that is a very interesting signal. This was a 2.5, 3 months ago. And then after that, I could see the price of Solana going up. But so yeah, it's interesting that there's so like few different narratives, but I still don't feel like there is a as strong one narrative like we've had in 2017 or 2021. But yeah, apart from that, what's your most contrarian view when it comes to Web3 or this whole ecosystem?
I feel everything which we are building, or let me rephrase it, most of it, 99% of the things which we are building today are the patch-up stuff. You have one chain, now you have L2s, then somebody's talking about L3s, and then you're talking about now interoperability between those L2s and L1s and between different L1s, and then now creating modular blockchains by creating, picking like a salad buffet. And even with all those options, nobody, like now we have data layers, but even data layers are now going to have already, they have not even come and they have not even given us a proper meta tag data. And they have already started talking about interoperability with other data layers. So I just feel like somehow, even with all the knowledge and understanding of how Web2 was created and how the tech stack was created for, and like a standardization of that, we have really messed up to create the Web3 stack. And my contrarian view is, in a couple of years, 99% of the things which exist today are just going to completely be shed aside. There will be a standardization. And that standardization is not going to be based on anything that we have today. And I get a lot of shit from a lot of my close friends who are L2 founders and like data layer founders. But it's...
That's the question I asked Vitalik as well. That
what did he say?
Very interesting. So basically, I have just a 2-minute clip. I'll send it to you, because he was talking about at ETH Waterloo that how there needs to be more collaboration so we can have a bit more standardization. What brings in standardization? It is when you have centralization, you can implement standardization. So I tried to ask him around that. So that, what do you think that there would be any way to do it? And he said, oh, I didn't use the word centralization, but that's generally what it is, that government centralized, that everyone will use this type of a power port. Then that's the whole country has that type of a power port, just in electricity or anything. It's a centralized rule that is made so that everything can talk to everything else. Right now, that is a big challenge. And that's why we have bridges, and then the bridges are exploited and all these sort of things that we happen. The stack is broken. So immediately, you know, we'd never force anyone to. But yeah, of course, we want people to collaborate, but it is so challenging. We have a broken stack.
Yeah, and I think it will happen. Most of the crypto native people will hate it, but at the end of the day, that will be the only way for us to have a global inclusivity to the level that my mom and dad would be using it without even realizing it. It's not going to happen without that. And we have seen that happening in every possible. People have a short span of memory. Just 10 to 15 years back, doing any private encryption was, you could go to jail in US.
Really?
Yeah, because that was used by Air Force and the Army. So you cannot have an application. And that's where the crypto punk movement came in, and people from MIT went to jail and everything.
Yeah.
And that was not very long time back. And to the point that your WhatsApp very, with all the proud, keeps on sending you every message is encrypted. Like we have moved from there to here. When things start getting adopted by a lot of people, and when there is a lot of money associated with it, as we are seeing today, that so many crypto millionaires and billionaires are finally funding crypto pro senators and everything, you're going to start seeing those changes.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's a very hopeful thing that you shared, because I do feel like US has a bit of a negative crypto vibe compared to going to other countries around the world.
Okay, what are you talking about? When we both come to India, it's pretty much banned.
Oh, no, not India, but okay. So I'm sure you read the developer report, Electric Capital's developer report. Everyone does.
I love Maria. I think she does a great job with her developer report.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So yeah, everyone knows that. So you can see this. The share of the US developers has gone from 40% to 28% in the last few years. And it felt like as soon as the whole AI boom came, it sucked up a lot of the money and the funding from Web3 to AI. It felt like it. I could be wrong.
I would look at it in a very different way. Yeah. I would look at it in my own personal experience. Most of the developers, as soon as they start making money, they move out of US.
Yeah, they do.
They just move out of US. I think Lisbon has become huge. Anyone and every, most of the VCs I knew.
Yes.
Now, actually, it's easier for me to meet them in Lisbon in any random time than just sitting in New York or SF or Dubai or Singapore, for that matter.
Yeah.
London is another one. So I sometimes even I feel like that when it comes to companies, builders, developers, they somehow don't feel US is a safe place for them or a place for them. And also the talent has moved. Of course, like the whole Zoom and decentralization in the blockchain space, the workspace has always existed, right? Like even in our own team, we have people across Dubai, India, London, Zurich, doesn't matter.
Absolutely. I've been working remote. I haven't worked in New Zealand for 3 years now. I've been working with teams all around the world, as right now we are talking across the planet. So yeah, that's definitely I've seen. But it's like even some of the DeFi projects, they start with not for US customers.
Yeah.
So that is definitely a trend. That was not a thing in 2016-17. That was, I felt like that is a recent years thing. We just take it as it has been like that in 2016.
It's a precautionary tale, right? That, okay, just do not offer it to US customers and SEC probably is not going to come after you.
Yes.
It has just become that precautionary tale. Is that good for retail or is that actually those US retail customers are now not having the same opportunities to explore is actually sad in a way, because that means you are not giving an equal advantage to US. It's just have turned the tables from emerging markets to US. The tables have turned around.
Yes,
altogether.
They have. That's exactly what I meant, that the crypto narrative is a lot stronger compared to US, because I'm comparing it to the time before. Like I'm comparing it to 2017, 2018 to now. It seems it's just like going to Token 2049 and in Singapore, going to events in Dubai. It felt very vibrant, and nearly everyone I talked to has a positive viewpoint for crypto, even though they might not be allowed to do things in their country, but they still have a positive viewpoint. Whereas it's 50-50, it's mixed in US. It felt like that a lot of devs moved from Web3 to AI and other things. Not only devs, also the funding moved slightly. So it's very interesting. What's your biggest challenge at your fund currently that you're facing?
I think the biggest challenge, there are couple of challenges which we are facing, right? The first one is always about every time when you pass, there's most of the time you have very strong reasons to pass. And then there are sometimes it's all there, but we don't have very strong reason to say yes, but everything seems okay. Making those decisions at the end always seems like a challenge to me. Secondly, I feel like the way the market has been in last year, a lot of companies, our portfolio companies, needed a lot of support. And it has been challenging with some founders. It has been very good with some founders. So I always say, when you reach a point when you have 50, 60 companies in portfolio and you're still deploying, like either you start extending the resources so that you have everything to really support, or it just becomes too much. And we are in this phase of expanding our resources and everything and getting those streamlined. And I think just not for us, but everybody who has been operating within the US jurisdiction as founders and VCs, the lack of regulation clarity has been...
It's a killer.
It's a big challenge, right? Yeah. Because you want to advise, you have to advise to your founders, but you also don't want to really make, like, really mess it up. So... Even though I am working in US, my company is registered out of Delaware. I'm still telling my founders, maybe you just want to be offshore.
I completely understand. And that is a trend I have seen. And that's the trend I was commenting on, that I am more bullish about areas outside of US just for this category, because I understand I can't talk about everything. It's also talking to different founders in this space, especially founders who sell to corporates, because in SaaS products, that's like B2B was the gold mine. It's like B2C is so hard, and the consumer pays you $5, $8. You need millions and millions. And then your AWS bill is a killer at that level. Is for B2B, you're selling to corporates. Each client is $100K to $1 million in ARR. And that was the model that VCs followed, the triple double model and everything. It was all well known. Web3 can't have that, because corporates and enterprise won't deal in Web3, blockchain, all this, until they can price in their risk. They cannot price in their risk until there is clear regulation. It doesn't matter. It's like people are just like asking for regulation. So let it get it done so we know where we stand, like founders, where they stand, whether what they're allowed and what they're not allowed to build. So I think that is definitely hurting. Yeah. I don't know, Web3 startups in US.
Yeah, for true.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Maybe it's time for me to interview some senator.
You should. Nowadays, so many senators I know.
I did have a catch up with Senator of, is it Wyoming, who is wants to build a Wyoming based stablecoin. What's his name? Chris something. I have to check. I had a catch up with him a few months ago. They plan to release sometime this year a stablecoin backed by Wyoming state, and they don't want to just back it 100%. They were going to back it 102 or 104%, leaving some margin.
Oh, with an yield built in. So it will be a yield stablecoin. It's very interesting how this could divide state by state regulations on the financial side and how federal government is. It's very fascinating.
Oh, no, he said that. Oh, look, it's not in his hand. And only in his hand. He is trying to push it, but there's so many parties.
No, but the state level, at the state level, if they can do it, I don't know. I don't know much about it. I have not studied US legal, federal, but I have always been very curious because I grew up in India. That US state legislation have such strong power to do things state by state.
I know, not in India.
I've never experienced growing up in India, right? It's always about the central government making choices. State governments can do whatever small stuff. But in US, it's different. Like once they can't choose a different currency, but within that currency, they can do anything with their own state level bonds and treasuries and anything.
Yes. Yes.
Would be interesting to see if crypto will be the reason US Constitution has to be changed. I don't think so.
Chris Rothfuss, that's his name. Wyoming-based Chris Rothfuss, the Wyoming senator. Yeah. So, I should do some more of those. Because that definitely...
A lot of them are coming now. I keep on getting emails to donate or to attend, but
No, it's just I'm not that interested in politics at all, so that's why I've avoided that.
I can't even vote in US.
Oh really? Because you've been there for so long, right? You've been there.
No, I'm not ready yet, but let's see. But I'm very thankful to this country, but I'm not ready yet to change my passport.
Yes. Like when I went to Singapore, to Dubai, to Abu Dhabi, so many VCs that have moved there. Not only VCs, also founders or also all type of people moved in the nearby region, then they go to the conferences in these places. Okay. So it is definitely interesting. Having said all that, do you have a ask? My last final question.
Yes.
Are you looking for anything? Yes.
Great founders. I think we are actively deploying. Please shoot me an email with your deck at kavita@deltafund.io or DM me on my Twitter. And we are looking for a lot of amazing infra project. We invest both in equity and token and invest globally. So all I'm asking for are amazing founders.
Fantastic. Oh, I can definitely help you with that. That's not a problem at all. So Kavita, it's been absolute pleasure talking with you. I had so much fun. And just wish you best of luck. And thank you for supporting founders.
No, thank you. Thank you so much, Sam, for having me. And all the best with you too, because you're also looking for founders and amazing projects. So let's continue on that.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.